Managing your money is kind of like going to the dentist or standing in line to renew your driver's license. Nobody wants to do it, but you kind of have to get your teeth cleaned and renew your license and manage your personal finances. But maybe there is a way to get it all done in an easier, less stressful fashion. Kristen Wong's joining us. She's a financial journalist with Life Hacker, The New York Times, and the author of Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford. She joins us now from Los Angeles, California. Hello there.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
You dedicate this book to your parents, and you include a quote, "Money doesn't buy happiness, but let's find out just to be sure." I love that quote, and I'm fascinated to hear the anecdotes about your family. How did they influence your views about money and this book in particular?
Well, you know, my parents, we grew up with not a lot of money, and it held us back in a lot of ways. There were things I wanted to do as a kid that we couldn't afford to do. We couldn't afford to go on vacation. My parents were always working. It was always a source of money, was always a source of stress for them. And I saw how their relationship with money kind of changed. They were kind of personal finance nerds. Like, they were trying to figure out how to improve their financial situation, and they did. And by the time I was older, I saw how their lifestyle changed because of money. And so that had a really big impression on me. And I really saw that, hey, if you learn a little bit about how this tool works, how this money thing works, your life can change in some pretty significant ways. Suddenly they were able to afford to go on vacation. They didn't argue about money as much. And that's not to say money is going to solve all of your problems, but I think it does solve some problems, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you have a problem paying rent, then money's going to help you solve that.
It is a very colloquial take on money, including swearing. You swear repeatedly in this book, which I'm sure you're not allowed to do when you write for the New York Times. Why did you decide to use the voice that I can imagine you would use if you were talking to a group of friends in a pub?
Well, I think it's just more accessible that way. It's almost not even a conscious thing. It's just how I would talk.
You swear like that in real life? My God, I'm putting a swear jar into practice there. All of like $50 before lunch.
Well, it's a good way to make a few extra bucks that way. But yeah, it's just, I think people, you know, and not everybody's a fan of it, but I think people just respond better, not just to the way that the tone in which you're writing, but also, like, I use a lot of personal anecdotes in the story about how money has impacted me. Like, what does it look like to open a 401k? Because if you just tell people, here's the process you need to go through to open a 401k, well, they're going to kind of tune out. Like, you need to see what that looks like in fact.
401k. It's an RSP in Canadian language. Super boring. It's just so boring. And now you write, you frame the book in three stages. What are the stages and why did you decide to structure it this way?
Well, because I so the first stage is just kind of figuring out the basics of your money, just learning how your money works. And then the second stage is optimizing your money. So, you know, after you figure out how your money works, well, the first stage is just called power up. So that's just kind of like, if you're feeling low about money, you really don't feel like you have any power or control over it, this stage is going to help you. It focuses on small wins to help you feel more and more like you can do, you know, personal finance. You can do this money thing. Stage two is to optimize your finances. So I kind of like to explain that, like, you know, you're figuring out how the machine works in stage one. Stage two, you're making it a well-oiled machine. So it's more efficient ways to handle your money. So, like, finding a better bank, figuring out how to spend money more mindfully, that sort of thing. And then the third stage of the book is called grow, and that's pretty self-explanatory. That's when you're going to figure out how to make your money grow. So that's like negotiating, picking up a side hustle, investing, stuff like that. And I think, you know, it's just the book is very much focused on helping readers feel like they have control over their money. I feel like most of the time we feel the exact opposite, right? Like, most people feel like money controls them. And I really think, like, in my own financial journey, feeling in control, like I was in the driver's seat, that changed everything. Like, my financial situation turned around completely. And there's research on this that shows, like, even when you just feel a sense of control over your money, even if you don't have control over it, you actually make better saving decisions. You make better financial decisions when you have this. You know, when you feel powerful, because you want to maintain that feeling of power. So then you make better money decisions to maintain that control and that power. So it's just, I don't know, it's so psychological. And I kind of wanted to write the book from that you know, it's very much a mindset thing. There are some, you know, black and white rules about personal finance that are never going to change, but it's so behavioral. And so the book is very focused on habits and behavior.
You have a chapter on supercharging your debt payoff plan, which I loved. And you talk about the Doc Martens you bought with your brand new credit card. But somehow a $100 pair of boots became $1,900 in outstanding debt. How did you resolve that for yourself? How'd you get rid of it?
Well, I actually used the snowball method, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the snowball method.
Yeah, we've talked about it, but worth recapping.
Yeah, so it's when you focus on paying off your smallest debts first, and speaking of behavior, like, that just makes you feel more in control. So when you pay off that, you know, when you pay off your smaller debts, you are motivated by that, and you're like, wow, I can really do this, so I'm going to keep going. So that's the way that I did it. You know, I had the credit card with those Doc Martens on them from back in the day. And after I graduated college, I had a student loan. And so I used the snowball method, and I prioritized the debts that I had. And I focused on paying off the smaller ones first so that I felt motivated by that. And I felt like I could get a taste of what it was like to be debt free. And then eventually I did become debt free.
Do balance transfers, do credit card balance transfers work? They seem like such a shell game and fraught.
I know. It's a dangerous thing to just jump into, I think, but they can work, and I've used them myself, but there are so many caveats that you want to consider. You want to read the fine print when you do a balance transfer. You know, their credit cards don't offer things like that unless they profit from them. Mm. So, you know, they can work where it's basically you transfer your balance to a new card with, you know, 0% interest, so you kind of get to skip out on the interest and you can make more progress. But yeah, there's just, you want to make sure you know what you're getting into, see if there are any fees associated with it, because if there are balance transfer fees, it might end up costing you more than it's worth. So, you know, anything that's like a credit card offer, I usually caution people to, if it sounds too good to be true,
it should go directly into the shredder. Budget like you're building a house. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think like with a house, you have your foundation, right? And I think with a budget, your foundation is your goal. Like, what is your financial goal? Why do you want to get out of debt? Why are you reading a book about money? Why are you listening to a show about money? What is it about? If, you know, money is just a tool at the end of the day. It's not good or bad, it's just a tool. What do you want to use that tool for? Is it to travel? Is it to make sure that your family feels fed and clothed and comfortable? Whatever your goal is, that should be the basis for creating your budget. Otherwise, when you have to say no to something because you're saving money, it's just going to feel like restricting yourself. So you don't want a budget to feel restrictive. You want to give yourself something to say yes to so that you can say no to other things. And I think that is the foundation of your budget, having a goal in mind. So when you say, no, I can't go out with my friends, it's for a reason. It's because you're saving up for this trip. If you're just doing it to be, I'm a responsible adult and I need to have a budget because that's what responsible adults do. Chances are you're not going to stick to the budget.
Do you have one? Do you use one? A budget?
A budget?
Yeah.
I sure do, yes. And I am kind of a money nerd, so
I'm a money nerd, but I don't have a budget.
What do you have? What do you use?
Nothing. I just always spend less than I have. Makes my life very, very simple. Save first, that's all I do.
You have that habit, you don't have to.
And I dumpster dive for dinner as well.
Well, that always helps.
Yeah, that makes it much easier. I wish we could talk all day. Kristen, thank you for joining us and congrats on your book. Writing books is a stupid idea. They're way too hard.
They are very hard.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk about it. That's easy. Kristen Wong, a writer with Lifehacker, New York Times, and the author of Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford. She joined us from LA today.